you're too busy to set goals, or if you're unsure what the right goals are for you, or if you're just not clear on what's next for you in your business and your life, I've got the solution you've been looking for. Join my free 7-day course designed for athletic-minded men who want to maximize their potential in business and life. And I'm going to help you create a clear plan for achieving your biggest goals faster. So if you feel like you're driving with the parking brake on, if you feel like you're going 100 miles an hour all day long, but not really moving the needle in your life, get started with me today. Get instant access to this 7-day course where you and I will get to interact live with each other. Plus, you'll have access to a community of like-minded, high-performing, athletic-minded, competitive men looking to unlock their next level as well. Just visit jimharshawjr.com/free. That's jimharshawjr.com/free.
The real challenge is integration. If we were a one-dimensional person who was solely focused on winning at work, we would be fine. But we're not. We're a holistic person. We want to be healthy. We want to have good relationships, good habits. And so that, I feel like, is the real challenge, is kind of all of these things coming together.
Welcome to another episode of Success for the Athletic-Minded Man. Real talk on harnessing your athletic drive for clarity, consistency, and focus in business and life. This is your host, Jim Harsher Jr., and today I'm bringing you Nathan Tanner. You ever wonder how the highest performing leaders, the most successful executives, how they operate and how that's different from the rest of the world, from those who are still stuck at good and want to become great? Well, that's exactly what we talk about here in this interview with Nathan Tanner. Nathan has worked with leaders at high growth startups and other companies like DoorDash, Electronic Arts, EA, LinkedIn, Lyft, and Google, and all these other great companies that are household names. He's been an advisor at Y Combinator, which is one of the probably most successful incubators in the world, probably in history, out in Silicon Valley. So Nathan's worked with all these amazing leaders, and he himself has had some incredible experiences. He was the head of HR at DoorDash when they went from 250 to 5,000 employees. I mean, what a crazy ride that was. He was part of Lehman Brothers. Actually, I'm not even going to share some of this. I'm going to let you hear it for the first time from his lips, because there are some crazy things that he shares that he's experienced in his career. He's also a writer for Forbes, Inc. magazine, Fast Company, and other publications. And he's an Ironman triathlete. And he talks about how he trained for an Ironman, became an Ironman, and he's a father of four, and, you know, balancing career, balancing training. So a really interesting guy in so many ways. And he has a great book called The Unconquerable Leader, and it is a fascinating, fascinating book. Now, if you want to participate in a discussion around what we talk about here in today's episode, join my free community. Go to jimharshawjr.com/free. Every week, we're talking about these podcast episodes, the big questions, the big learnings that come out of these. You can actually get more clarity. I'm in there. You and I can have a conversation around this in the community. Again, go to jimharshawjr.com/free. There's also a free seven days to clarity course in there. It's all my best stuff packed into a 7-day free video course with worksheets and discussion exercises, et cetera. So jump on in there. I look forward to interacting with you. All right, let's get into it. My interview with Nathan Tanner. You completed an Ironman. I want to know, like, you're a busy guy, father of four. I don't know when you did this. I'm curious, like, when did you do the Ironman? What was your work and family situation? Like, I've always wanted to do one, but just the sheer volume of time that goes into that, you know, scares me.
Yeah, it's a lot. It was about 3 years ago I did it. And the impetus behind the Ironman, I think, is just as important as doing the Ironman itself. I had this experience. I was flying from Salt Lake City to California to meet my family. I was late for a flight, and I'm like running through the airport. I'm like hot and sweaty, and I get there, and there's a 45-minute flight delay. And I realize, oh, I'm not going to be able to see my wife and kids, or at least my kids, they're going to be asleep before that. And now I'm like sweaty, and I'm in this warm airport. And I remember thinking, like, this is the absolute worst thing that has ever happened to me. And I'm embarrassed to say that. And then I catch myself in this moment. I'm like, well, how did you get so like soft. Like, how is this such like a challenging thing for you? Funny enough, I see this book over your shoulder, The Comfort Crisis. I stumbled on this book and I started looking into like the science of comfort and learned about this idea of a misogi, of this like one thing you do one day a year that's so hard and like kind of resets your expectations for the rest of the year. And I was thinking about that. I'm like, I haven't done anything really hard in a while. And so I'd done a couple short distance triathlons at that point. And I had a friend who was doing an Ironman. And I thought about this like 2.4 mile swim, over 100 mile bike ride, and then a marathon at the end. I'm like, oh, that may be like impossible. And once I thought that, I'm like, that's it. That's my misogi. And so I remember I signed up for it. I committed to doing it. I was still in a full-time job when I signed up for it, but I was actually in the process of transitioning to be a full-time coach when that took place.
Wow. So there's a lot of time that goes into that. So you mentioned Michael Easter. I interviewed him for the listeners. If you want to go back to episode 312, we had Michael on, and a really great conversation. In the Comfort Crisis is such a great book. So what was harder, going through the Ironman, training and competing in the Ironman, or going through the collapse of Lehman Brothers? So this was the largest bankruptcy in history, and you were working, as an investment banker at Lehman at the time, is that right?
I was, yeah. So I'm a 2008 grad, and I remember in 2007, I got this internship. I worked hard, I networked. These banks didn't come and recruit on my school. At my school, felt like so awesome getting this job. And fast forward, I start summer of 2008, full time. A couple weeks into the job, Lehman Brothers goes bankrupt. Yes, largest bankruptcy in history, kind of triggered the financial crisis and the Great Recession. And it was, as hard as the Ironman was, that was really, in just a one day period. And I knew if I didn't finish or something happened, like, I'm going to have to sign up again and finish it eventually. Lehman Brothers was really challenging because it struck the story that I've been telling myself and kind of how I viewed myself. So a lot of my kind of inner narrative was wrapped up in, like, I am this kind of young, successful investment banker, and I've got this job, and my identity had to be revisited when I lost that job and ultimately really, really struggled. And so that was a very, very challenging period, because for months leading up to, it wasn't just the bankruptcy. I joined Barclays after the bankruptcy when they acquired the U.S. operations. And then I got let go from that position. And so there was just this whole like garbage story I was telling myself around, like, I'm not good, I'm not smart enough. And then I really struggled to find work after that. And so that was a very, very challenging period.
You obviously have come a long way since then, and you've had an incredibly successful career and have worked with all these amazing companies. And in your book, The Unconquerable Leader, there is a part where you, at the very beginning, where you talk about telling a new story. Is that related to kind of something you had to go through coming out of these failures and these setbacks in your career? Did you have to tell yourself a different story?
Yeah, that's absolutely it. And so I remember when I got the Lehman Brothers internship, someone in my class was like, oh, you've made it. Like, you are set. And I remember like kind of laughing and brushing it off. But I believed that to an extent of like, okay, I got this job. Now I'm like, good. I'm on the path of success. And that story just got completely rocked. And then I started telling myself the story of like, I don't think I'm smart enough. I don't know if I'm good enough. And I ended up getting back into investment banking. There was a job opportunity that came up at a smaller bank years later. And I was hesitant to interview because that story had been shattered. And so I've learned, like, we can only grow as much as we're allowing ourselves to. Like, we need to continue to tell ourselves new stories around what's possible. And like that, I think, is a central theme to how I've evolved and made career changes from finance to HR and to coaching. But that's a muscle that has been built over time. And it's something that I've certainly struggled with in the past.
Yeah, I think that's critical for the listener. I mean, how do you go about that? Like, because every listener, The people who listen to a podcast like this are generally guys who know there's another gear inside of them, right? They want to go from good to great, and they're probably working really hard. There's probably a story going on inside of their head, and I don't know. Maybe you can tell me your opinion of this or thought of this is different. Like for me, I feel like it's typically unconscious. Like it's this subconscious line of thought that is just underlying their daily decisions, daily actions, what they think. How do you identify that? Like, what do you do about it? Because I've heard this before. This isn't the first time someone's heard about, like, tell yourself a new story. Like, how do you actually go about that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the places to start are the labels that we attach to ourselves. I've heard this quote of, like, the more labels we have for ourselves, the dumber we are. Another way of that is the more labels we have for ourselves, the more self-limiting that may be. And so I think naturally we think, like, okay, I am good at this, or I'm bad at this. And so I think kind of calling that out, the first place that I start is, like, let's take time and identify those stories that you're telling yourselves. Like, what are they? And it does take some self-reflection. And so the first question is, like, what's a story I'm telling myself that no longer serves me?
We're going to have that in the action plan, by the way. So if you didn't remember that question, like, that is a critical question we need to ask. And Nathan, one of the things that I talk about a lot in this podcast is this concept of, like, all success comes from not doing, but actually from hitting the pause button first. Hitting the pause button, asking these hard questions, this kind of self-reflection, how are these labels no longer serving me? And the concept that I've coined this term called the productive pause, and the productive pause is defined as this. It's a short period of focused reflection around specific questions that leads to clarity of action and peace of mind. And that's what we're talking about. So for the listener, like, Nathan's really good at what he does. He's worked with all these great companies, helped them scale. You know, he's hired by Y Combinator and DoorDash and LinkedIn. He's worked with all, like, he knows what he's talking about. This stuff doesn't work unless you actually do it and hit the pause button. So go ahead, Nathan. Walk us, tell us more.
I'll share that question one more time. What's a story you've been telling yourself that no longer serves you?
Quick interruption. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, be sure to get the notes, quotes, and links in the action plan from this episode. Just go to jimharshawjr.com/action. That's jimharshawjr.com/action to get your free copy of the action plan. Now back to the show.
And I'll share two very quick examples. So in eighth grade, we had to run a mile every single week. I could not finish that mile once without stopping to walk halfway through it.
So I am not a good runner.
Yeah, like I just can't run. And you know, a couple of years later, I'm in this honors English class and we're writing all the time. And like, I'm getting bad grades on my writing. I'm falling behind. I transfer out of this class. And what's another story? Like, I am not a good writer. And those stories stick with me for a long time. And I think we all have things like that. And so the second question is, once we've identified a story that no longer serves us, is what's a different story you can tell? So that's the second question. And that's critical. And so I decided in both of those situations, I'm like, okay, I'm not a good runner or I'm not a good writer yet. And then how do I create evidence to tell a new story? Like, okay, I'm going to go out and run every day for the next, you know, 2 weeks. And I might not get that far, but I'm just going to, like, keep doing it. Or I started writing for a website called Bleacher Report. I wasn't paid. Very few people read it at first, but I'm like, I'm going to write 20, 30 articles. And so once you've identified the new story you want to tell, go out and find little pieces of evidence that solidify that story around who you want to be.
And I'll say I have an exercise in our program called cognitive restructuring or cognitive conversion. It's based on this concept, cognitive behavioral therapy, called cognitive restructuring. So cognitive conversion is doing exactly what you're talking about, but sometimes you have to go create the evidence. Sometimes the evidence is actually already there. Sometimes you can just look in your history and go, wait a second, I've been telling myself this story, but there's actually this, I did this and I've done that and I've done this and I've done that. And the evidence, you have to go create it, new stuff, but there's also evidence in your past sometimes that tells a different story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Great call out, Jim.
Yeah. And so you work with all these incredibly high performers and high performing executives in these companies that we know, these household names. Do they struggle with these kinds of things? And if so, how are you helping them working through the challenges? Like, what are some of the challenges that you see these people who are in these high performing roles? Because I'm going to quote something from your book, The Unconquerable Leader. You said the real challenge of leadership is doing all of these things. In the prior sentence, you basically talked about crafting the vision and setting goals and communicating, et cetera. So the real challenge of leadership is doing all of these things at once when deep down you feel like an imposter. The real challenge is showing up with confidence when the odds are stacked against you. The real challenge is thriving at work and away from work. Can we talk about some of these challenges? Because I think my audience absolutely resonates with all of these things. Imposter, showing up with confidence when the odds are stacked against you, and then thriving at work and at home.
Yeah. When I became an executive coach, or when I was on the early path of becoming an executive coach, I remember thinking, like, I am going to come in and help people become better leaders. And I'm using air quotes here, Jim. Around leaders, like, I'm going to help people learn to delegate effectively and hold their team accountable and give difficult feedback and all of these leadership attributes that we often think about or tactics. I call this the external game when I share this in my book. And that was kind of how I was coming into it. And what I realized when I actually started working with very successful people, like, yes, those things are important. But the larger challenge was the internal game. All of the things that were going on inside of them that impacted how they lead, but weren't visible to others. And so we've already touched on this. These are the stories that we tell ourselves. This is managing our ego. It's mental and emotional resilience. Like, there are coaching sessions I have where, like, sometimes I'm only talking about someone's marriage for 45 minutes because that may be what is holding them back from showing up the way they want to. And so that I think is the real challenge. It's this integration. Like, if we were a one-dimensional person who was solely focused on, like, winning at work, like, we would be fine. But we're not. We're a holistic person, and we want to be healthy. We want to have good relationships, good habits. And so that, I feel like, is the real challenge, is kind of all of these things coming together. And that's where I feel like the magic of coaching can come from.
Yeah, totally agree. That's in our coaching practice, we call it executive life coaching, you know, and we're setting goals, not only career and business goals, but relationships, self, health, and then wealth is the career business goals. These are all impacting one another. Are there habits or routines that you generally see the higher performers doing, or the ones who are struggling not doing? Are there sort of common themes or common habits or routines that you're seeing?
Yeah, this is where one-on-one coaching, I think, becomes really powerful. One of the things I immediately do with the executives that I coach is, like, let's look at your daily practice. I call this a daily practice. Like, what are the core activities that if you do consistently, you're going to show up as your best self? And so that usually is some sort of exercise, physical movement. For many, it is prayer or meditation or some sort of spiritual practice. I really push hard on gratitude and expressing gratitude for the things that we've had. But I have found that it can vary a little bit of what it looks like from person to person. There's no, like, you have to wake up at 5 a.m. and cold plunge and do all of these things. But, like, let's identify what works for you. Like, when you have performed at your best, what were you doing? One of my favorite lines I share is, like, and maybe this comes from me being a triathlete, but life is an endurance sport. It's not just about showing up today or showing up tomorrow. It's like, how do you string together a series of, you know, consistent performance that is going to allow you to operate at your best?
Yeah. And that comes from, I'm going to reference your book here. It comes from not doing everything. You know, when I interviewed Tim Ferriss back for the listener episode 246, 247, if you want to go back and listen to those are really, really, I got so much out of those interviews. But one of the things that Tim Ferriss talked about is if you try to follow the morning routines of all of the gurus and all the people out there that say you should, you know, cold plunge and meditate and pray and journal and work out and drink green tea and do, you know, like, it's like you'll be doing your, he said, you'll be doing your morning routine until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And it just was such a good point. Like, you can't do it all. And in your book, there's this chapter that really jumped out to me. You said, decide where you'll intentionally underperform. Decide where you'll intentionally underperform. And you start out, you say this, you said, there's this often heard quote out there, how you do anything is how you do everything. I think that is such a load of crap, and you do too. And I'm glad to find a kindred soul in that. So talk about that.
Yeah. The challenge we face is the challenge of more. There's always a like, oh yeah, I need to do that. We hear someone who has, you're probably listening to this and thinking like, oh yeah, I probably need to exercise more, or maybe I do need to add this or add that. And the challenge for ambitious, highly successful people is like, there's always more. And so when I push people on, I'm like, okay, let's add more, but what are we going to remove? Or what are you going to allow yourself to fail at? Like, there was a period where the only exercise I did was as many push-ups I could do without stopping before I then like jumped in my car and ran off to work. And doing, 50 push-ups? That was a success for me physically. It took 60 seconds and that was it. And I was like, I'm going to strategically underperform in this. It's a good question for everyone of like, okay, given the vision I have for myself, what I want to do, what I want to prioritize, what am I willing to let go? And maybe that's relationships. I don't want to make any recommendations. We have to cut things.
Yep. It's where can I say no, or not yet, or not now. And I have a similar story when I was working full time and building this business in my last full year working full time. I'll use your term, strategically underperform. I love that term, strategic underperformance. That is such a great, that is a great concept. I strategically underperformed in my health and fitness too, because I knew that I had a job to do, which was 50, 60 hour a week job and working nights and weekends and travel and all this stuff. And I was building a business on the side and four kids and everything else that goes with it. So I said, my goal is to do 300 workouts this year, and I'm going to count if I do a 10 minute HIIT workout in the morning. Literally 10 minutes, it was three sets of pushups, three sets of pull-ups, three sets of 10 burpees, and three sets of curls. And that was it. Like, that was my, or three sets of abs. And that was my workout. And I could do it in 10 minutes or less, and it counted, and I strategically underperformed there. And then the very next year is when I ran a marathon. I'd always wanted to run a marathon. And so for the listener, you have to think about how to apply this to your life. Like, where can you strategically underperform? Where can you let go, say no, not now, not yet, to this, to something, so you can focus on the right thing.
And it helps us remove the guilt. But for me, and I think for a lot of ambitious people, there's a guilt that comes with, I should be doing this, but I'm not doing. And then if it's like intentionally, like, I'm not prioritizing this right now, great. Let's remove the guilt and put all the positive energy into where it needs to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Get clear on that. Like, if you're not clear on it, you just feel guilty. And so for me, I actually went through a process yesterday. I did a productive pause. And on my whiteboard here in my office, I had about 15 things that I felt I should be doing. More social media, more of this, you know, optimizing YouTube videos and marketing for this and, you know, doing these outreaches and all of this. And I put it all up there and I said, okay, what can I say yes to? What do I want to say yes to, and what can I say no to? So now there are some things that are on that list that I feel like I should be doing. I'm like, oh, I'm actually going to strategically underperform. I'm going to put those aside so I can focus on what matters most right now. And that's it. And this goes back to, for the listener, you have to have this clear vision for your life. And this is something that I coach, and Nathan, I would love to hear your thoughts on this, is like getting clear on your life, not just clear on your business and your work life and how much money you want to make, and but also like, what does your vision for your marriage look like, or your relationships look like? What does your vision in your faith life look like? What does your vision look like in your health and fitness? Like, it's not going to be the same as Nathan's. It's not going to be the same as mine. It's going to be yours. So how important is that in being scalable, to use your term, like you've talked about in your book, scaling yourself? How do you scale yourself? Like, how important is the vision, having that clear vision, in scaling yourself?
Yeah. Whenever I start working with a new executive, I have a 20-question intake form that we walk through. And the first question is, let's fast forward to the end of your life. Someone's giving a speech about you. What would you want them to say? How do you want to be remembered? We do this before we get into like, what leadership attributes do you want to grow? And then we'll spend some time around core values. And it all starts with that vision and the long-term goal of who you want to become. And then that allows you to kind of take steps back and think, okay, how do I get there? And so I have learned this, like, the clearer it is, the clearer the goal we have, the more likely it will be that we get there. And so that starts with everything. I mean, we hear about climbing the ladder. And the last thing I want for me or for anyone I work with, it's like, okay, you've spent your life climbing this ladder only to realize that it's up against the wrong wall. And so it requires intentionality. It requires like stepping back and thinking about that long-term vision.
Yeah. And unfortunately, most people don't do that work, right? They just wake up and do the same thing today for no better reason than that's what they did yesterday, and the same thing tomorrow for no better reason than that's what they did today. And they're drifting or coasting through, maybe not even coasting, but drifting, you know, with the masses, with what they're seeing on social media and what the mass media is telling them they should want, or based on, you know, setting their goals based on what's parked in their neighbor's driveway instead of what they want, right? They don't have that clear target. And so they just, they drift, right? And then they feel like they should be doing all these other things. And but whenever you get clear on the vision, then it's like, okay, you can go back to the prior things that we were talking about. Like, you can understand, okay, these are the things that should be included in my life, and these are the things that can be excluded, or I can say no, or not now, or not yet too. So Nathan, you had an incredible experience at DoorDash. You were part of scaling DoorDash from about 250 people to 5,000 people. What was that ride like?
DoorDash was an incredible ride. I was at LinkedIn, which is an excellent company. There were probably 11 or 12,000 people there. And I remember telling myself, like, I want to be at an earlier stage startup. I want to have more impact. I want to have a bigger job. And joining DoorDash was very much a be careful what you wish for moment, because I stepped into a head of HR role. I hadn't done it before. I hadn't worked at a company as small as DoorDash. And it was really, really challenging. And I remember those first 3 or 4 months just waking up every morning, like overwhelmed, kind of a anxious, like pit in my stomach. And it was really, really crazy at first. And then it was just a ton of fun. Once I adjusted to the pace and the speed of it, I mean, while I was there, we raised, I think, 5 rounds of funding, including an IPO. The valuation went from 600 or 700 million to 70 billion. And the first year and a half was really challenging. Like, there was a period, and Tony, CEO, founder, talks about this. Like, we almost ran out of money, and it was a very difficult period. And that, I think, became foundational to the rest of the company's success, because we had to get really, really good at operations. We had to figure out, how can we do more with less? How do we compete with an Uber or a Grubhub that has more resources? And during this period, yeah, DoorDash went from 10% market share to, I think they're over 60, 70% market share now in restaurant delivery. And so anyway, it was a ride of a lifetime, and one that in the process led to a lot of personal growth.
Yeah, I can imagine. You obviously did a lot of things right there. Can you think of a decision or a strategy that you wish you would have done differently in hindsight?
Yeah. And this is a lesson I've had both at DoorDash and other areas. I felt like I had to do everything myself. And I stepped into this role, and some of it's imposter syndrome. Some of it's like, I got to prove that they didn't hire the wrong person. And when you're leading HR, there's all these different responsibilities that you have of like, okay, I'm responsible for compensating people. So there's an analytical side. There's a, how do we train and develop people? So there's kind of a softer side. And I'm like, I have to be really, really good at everything. And in the process of trying to do that, I struggled. I wasn't able to do that. And we ultimately hired a chief people officer about a year and a half after I was there, which was the plan all along. And I remember when this person joined, she very quickly went out and hired a couple consultants or brought in other leaders that had very specific expertise. And I was like, oh, like, wait, I could have done that. Like, I didn't have to do this all myself. And so I think that was a big insight of like, okay. And I talk about this with leaders, but I struggled to do this myself. Of like, let's identify the very unique things that I am good at and I get energy in doing. And then how do I go out and hire other people who are strong in the areas where I'm weak or get really energized in things that are really, really draining to me? And so that was the biggest lesson during the time at DoorDash.
Yeah. Learn by doing. And I also think that it's easy for a lot of us to coach other people and help other people, but boy, we're on the inside of the jar trying to read the label ourselves. And it's critical for us to have those people outside of us coaching us, seeing our own blind spots, et cetera.
Absolutely.
Let's zoom out more broadly on your career. You know, you've worked at a bunch of amazing companies and you're working with all these amazing executives. Can you think about a failure or mistake that you made in your career that you learned the most from?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Lehman Brothers for this one. And the reason why Lehman Brothers was a failure for me was my mindset around the whole thing. So I had a lot of good learnings from this. Like I took my job for granted. I failed because of that. I didn't build a strong network internally at Lehman Brothers. So when they had to make difficult decisions around who to let go, I always let go. I learned that I needed to be indispensable, which I wasn't. And so that, I think, was a failure for me. I've had other failures. Like, there are really bad moments at DoorDash. There are triathlons where I did poorly. For me, though, this is a quote that you shared. Like, failure is not an ending. It's a beginning. It's a building block for success. I stumbled on that quote recently, but like, that's the mindset I've tried to have since. And so I just view failure differently. And one of my favorite words is experiments. And now, whenever I'm trying something new, like writing a book or offering a new coaching program, of like, let's think of this as an experiment where if I do it, I'm going to learn regardless. And so the Lehman Brothers was a failure because I had the mindset of like, this is on me. I made a mistake. Where now when I fail, it's like, okay, what am I going to learn from this? How am I going to move forward?
That's the crux that we all have to think about. And for the listener, you know, think about your own failure and how, you know, what does that make possible? What new knowledge, wisdom, information do you have now that you didn't have before that failure?
Yeah, I think, and just one other thought on this, like for me, the way I think about failure is like, failure's not trying. My book, I feel happy with how it's gone, but like I decided to write a book. Failure would have been letting fear stop me from like going through the publishing process. Yeah, failure's not like getting up to bat and swinging. Failure's like you have the ball in your hands and you don't take the shot. Like that's how I think about it.
Yeah, yeah, love that. Nathan, what's a habit for yourself that you most credit for your success? You've had incredible success, again, personally and professionally. What's one habit that you most credit for your own success?
Yeah, I've strived to do the daily practice that I work on with clients. And so mine is exercise, prayer and gratitude, other things. I think if there's one thing, I set a goal 11 years ago. I had a professor challenge me on this. He called it the 30 book challenge, to read 30 books in a year. And I'm very competitive. And so when he put the challenge out there, I'm like, okay, game on, let's give this a try. I have done every year since. I think this was 11 years ago. And I'm going to struggle We're recording this in November 2024. I'm going to struggle to get there, but I'm confident I'll get there. And that, I think, is one of the most important habits of regularly, and less about the number of books. It could be 10, it could be 20. But that focus of continually learning has been really, really important for me. Like, that's it of like, I don't know how to do something. Okay, I'm going to go figure it out, or I'm going to be open to a new idea or change. And having that mindset, I think, has been the most important.
For the listener who is bought into what you've shared here and they want to start taking action, what's one action item that they can do in the next, let's say, 24 to 48 hours to start moving towards our goals, to start implementing what you shared here today, Nathan?
Yeah, I go back to those questions around storytelling. Like, what's a story you've been telling yourself that no longer serves you? And then the second question, what's a different story? What's a new story you can tell? And then if I get a bonus one, writing your goals down every day. Like that is, I'm probably not the first person who shared that with you, but like, that's a habit I started a while ago. And it just like burns it into your subconscious. Whatever it is you want to do, put that front and center, remind yourself of it every day.
Yeah, love that. Simple. This stuff is easy to do, easy not to do. For the listener, I encourage you to take action. Make sure you download the action plan from this episode. Go to jimharshawjr.com/action, and we'll have all the links and quotes and everything that Nathan shared here. Nathan, where can people find you, follow you, buy your books, etc.?
Yes, I'm very active on LinkedIn, so would love it if you come and said hello. NathanTanner.net's my website. And then my book, The Unconquerable Leader, you can check out on Amazon.
Excellent. Nathan, thank you so much for making time to come on the show.
Thank you so much, Jim. My pleasure.